Live from the studios in Eugene, Oregon, it's Oregon Update with your host, Cliff and Robin, along with former Lane County Commissioner Cindy Wheeldryer and Pastor Bradley. Join us for a roundtable discussion of what's in the news today. And now, here's your host, Cliff and Robin.
Once again, and despite numerous emails to the contrary, we are back for another episode of Oregon Update. Cindy is still on assignment, and so this is Robin along with, in order, say hi.
Is that the order? I'm Cliff.
You are Cliff. This week you are Cliff.
And I am actually here this year. This week I have electricity and everything.
That's right. He plugged something in, took the whole city out. Also, at the other side of the table is Pastor Bradley. Good morning, Pastor.
Good morning.
We all speak at once here. Anyways, let me get the normal business out. It's kind of a crazy day here. We had a few days of summer here in the Eugene area. It came out a little bit of sunshine. People didn't know what to do except for cough because we are the air pollution allergy capital of the world. But anyways, you can call us right now at 646-721-9887. Send us an email, talk@krbnradio.com, or join us in the chat room. We have two chat rooms, the normal Blog Talk Radio one, which requires you to have an account if you'd like to participate, or you can just read if you sign in as a guest, or you can join us in the krbnradio.com chat room, which does not require any special accounts. Just come on in, make up a name, and join the conversation. Or better yet, if you've never called a talk show before, this is the best time to do it. 646-721. Hello. 646-721.
Sorry.
9887. Get your hand off that button. 646-721-9887. It's a crazy day. We've got a lot to talk about. And join the fun. Give us a call.
Okay. I will. It is a crazy day, obviously, yes. There's a lot to talk about. There's a lot been going on in the news, so we'll get into that. That sound was just me joining the chat room so I could see what's going on, if anything.
I thought you were just getting into some musical whatever. Anyway.
I'll do that, too. I have my system set up. I could play music for the next 6 weeks. I have my entire radio station going, but I don't have it going on air online.
Yeah, it's one of Cliff's little projects he's working on. But anyways, lots in the news. We got the candidates, the presidential election that we're going to talk about later on today. Some issues with Boeing's and the union. And we have a what the heck segment. Shall we get into that?
Oh, what the heck.
What the heck. Let's get into the what the heck. As soon as I can find the intro. They keep changing things on Blog Talk.
You have got to be kidding me.
What the heck were they thinking?
Can you actually believe they did that?
It's Robin's What the Heck Are They Thinking Award, where Robin picks out some of the dumbest and most ridiculous headlines of the week. And now, with this week's picks, here's Robin.
Okay, and we start off with, this one comes out of King County, Washington, where people, I guess there's been a lot of drownings on the rivers in King County. And so under emergency legislation, they passed a law requiring everybody to wear a life jacket if you are within 20 feet of the river.
Whoa.
Mm.
Within 20 feet of the river?
Right.
Washington has lots and lots of rivers.
Well, I guess you're going to be wearing a fashionable life jacket no matter where you go.
No kidding. That's ridiculous. Of course, 20 feet isn't very far away, so.
Yeah. But there's been some interesting comments to the article, and some of them I can't repeat on the air.
I would one of those probably non-repeatable arguments myself, because that's ridiculous. We're getting to the point that our government is just taking over too much of our lives. We've got to stop this, whether it's federal government or, you know, state government or local government.
Oh, and thank you for that lead-in. this one here is, I'm doing this unscripted, folks, so bear with me. Maryland is going to be the first state to require students to pass junk science tests before graduating.
What science test?
Junk science.
Junk science test?
As they're calling it. Basically, it is the mission of the Department of Energy to ensure America's security and prosperity by addressing its energy and environmental and nuclear changes. And they want, as part of a graduation requirement, to have the kids go through and pass a green test before graduating.
A green test.
A green test.
So, oh, great.
Actually, that's, I don't know exactly what that's, why it's being called junk, but actually it's a good idea, at least for students to know about what's green and what's not green and why, and what's, why it's good or bad or indifferent. And I mean, I don't know that you can possibly live in this world today and not know something about it, but it's something that we should be teaching in our schools.
Well, yeah. Speaking of green, piece of news that probably a lot of people aren't aware of is the 2012 incandescent light bulb ban.
We're back on that again, huh?
Back on that. Actually, it's being challenged. This comes out of CNSnews.com. House Energy and Commerce Committee Chairman Fred Upton says that he's close to an agreement with sponsors of legislation to repeal the 2007 ban on the ordinary incandescent light bulb.
Well, you know, I don't understand why we really care. I mean, I can understand why we would want to repeal it, because it's actually costing people a huge amount of money. I mean, it hasn't gone to the point where the fluorescent light bulb is anywhere near as efficient or as cheap as the incandescent light bulb.
Or safe, because of the little...
Two, yeah. You know, I don't understand, how can we mandate fluorescent light bulbs when they're not safe? I mean, everything else, if it's not safe, is considered a ban.
Exactly, because a little bit of mercury in them. And based on my experience, despite the fact that they are more expensive than a regular incandescent light bulb, at least my experience, they don't last that much longer.
Oh, well, that's wrong. I mean, they last a huge amount longer. Where have you used them that they didn't last any longer?
In the house.
Wow. Because I've got fluorescent light bulbs all over the place. For example, I've got my front porch lights. Now, I will have to admit, when I changed them out and put them in the front porch, or the front of the house, because it's actually three of them out there and they're not really on the porch, they're all over the front of the house. But the point is, I left them on 24 hours a day and was a little concerned, because about a year and a half later I had to replace them. But since then I've started turning them off, and I haven't replaced my front porch lights for like four years now, or something like that. I replaced the garage light about every 4 years, and regular light bulbs, I was replacing them every 3 and 4 months. So it was a huge difference. Huge difference.
Well, I know the name brand makes a difference, which I won't go into right at the moment for liability concerns, but I did, when I first moved into the house, I dated my light bulbs because I was going through them so quickly, and one particular brand definitely burned out a lot quicker than the other, so I won't mention the brand names. But
what's it like dating a light bulb? I haven't dated in a long time.
I can tell you this from firsthand experience. It wasn't too of a bright idea.
Here we go. I tell you, dating a light bulb. Well, you know, I have found that it does make a difference. But interestingly enough, I find that where I buy them, for example, if I buy them at a reputable store, I buy them only at Bi-Mart at this particular point, because I know they will find light bulbs that work. They don't want to have to keep replacing them and losing the money involved. So consequently, I seem to get good ones. And I don't even necessarily buy name brand light bulbs, but they last a lot longer, hugely longer. But they also cost a lot more. So I don't know. I haven't sat down and done the math to figure out cost per hour as far as light bulb is concerned. And then when you start getting into the fact that the federal government has decided there are guidelines of how you can throw them away, that gets totally ridiculous. So I believe at this particular point that they, I'll go along with that. They can't really mandate that we use the fluorescent bulbs at this particular point. They've made too many rules and regulations around it.
Well, and how many people are actually going to, because you're not supposed to throw them away in the regular garbage, you're supposed to wrap them up and do what, and if you break one, there's a whole EPA steps you're supposed to go through. It's like, I'm sorry, I mean, I may be a prude or something like that, but when my fluorescent light bulb burns out, it goes in the garbage.
Well, don't say that on the air. Because, I don't know, have they got any kind of penalties for doing that?
Well, I don't know. I guess you're supposed to wrap them up, put them in the recycling bin, which we don't have, or something.
We're going to send you to green school.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah.
I will fail miserably.
There you go. Well, see, we have to send you back to school.
I don't want to go to school. Anyways, the last thing on the list, and this is from KATU in Portland, which is actually bringing the news story. This is actually originated in Painesville, Ohio, where a northeast Ohio couple found themselves up to their ankles in trouble for rafting in a flood-swollen river without life preservers and lying about it afterwards. So the judge sentenced them to stand in a tiny swimming pool while wearing life jackets and handing out water safety brochures at a festival in Painesville.
I like these judges who come up with creative penalties.
Yeah.
It's weird, but it's just still, it's kind of cute.
They said they had the, they could choose the pool punishment and community service over 60 days in jail. Yeah, I'll stand in the pool.
Well, you know, I'm sorry, but I still have a problem with this. I am tired of my government protecting me against me. If I want to go out and commit suicide by jumping in a river and drowning, then I should be allowed to do that. I shouldn't be required to wear a life vest 20 feet away before I get to the river. I mean, this is getting totally ridiculous. The government, regardless of which government, is getting absolutely unbelievably intrusive into our personal lives.
Well, if that was the case, then how about Minot, North Dakota right now, where everything's underwater?
Yeah, right. Well, of course, in Minot, North Dakota, I think it's probably a logical move to wear a life vest no matter where you are.
Yeah, especially when you go to bed.
Yeah.
You never know where you'll be when you wake up in the morning.
Yeah, we are, you know, that gets into a subject I'm not even going to try to get into this year, this particular day, because we're really having an awful lot of natural disasters, not just in the United States, but around the world. And we're talking, between earthquakes and flooding and all kinds of things. They're talking now about the whole northern part of Japan being off, you know, nobody can live there for the next 100 years or so. And it's liable to end up that way for a large part of the northern part of Japan. And Japan needs that space. They don't have enough room to put all their people as it is.
Exactly. Well, who knows? Maybe there's something to the rapture.
Well, that's right, true. We're not, after October 21 or something like that, we're not going to have to worry about it. The world's coming to an end, so it's no big thing.
But still pay your taxes, just in case.
Really?
Well, the Bible does talk about... you know, when the time, end time is coming closer, there's more natural disasters and more wars and things like that. So, who knows?
Well, we definitely are into the more war thing. In fact, the I think I mentioned this on the last show about Libya. Obama's still wanting his involvement in it, despite what Congress is wanting, and stating that Congress doesn't have the authority to stop him.
We've got to stop Obama somehow or another. I mean, absolutely have to stop him, because I'm really convinced that what he's doing is, the more he continues to be our president, the more I'm convinced that he's deliberately doing things, and I think it's not for the good of the country. I'm sorry. It's just not.
Well, like the Obamacare provision, for example, which is supposed to take, which starts in 20. 2014 and goes into full effect in 2016, I think I mentioned this on previous shows, the actual dollar amount in penalties it'll cost you if you don't have insurance. Well, what's the most common reason why people don't have insurance?
Because they don't have money.
Exactly. And so one of these provisions in 2016 is a $2,000 penalty. I think it's $2,600 penalty. Now, how many people, especially in this recession, have $2,600 even in refunds coming back?
Really?
So,
really?
So is the IRS going to go after, you know, half or three quarters of the country because they don't have the health insurance and they can't afford the penalty?
Well, the simple fact is we're going to have to change precedents, and I think we're going to do that in 2014 or whatever the heck it is, 2012, because there's just too much going on, and he just keeps spending money no matter what, and then not only does he spend the money the government takes in, but he's spending our money out of our pocket as well, and so it's becoming intolerable. Something has got to be done.
And what I don't understand, and this just a news break, federal appeals court in Cincinnati has upheld the President Obama's health care overhaul. The ruling is the first by a federal appeals court on the overhaul. The three-judge, six U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals panel delivered a long opinion, however, and disagreed with some issues. But basically, they're reaffirming. They said it... let's see, as I'm scanning here, said it was unconstitutional and that Congress was overstepping its powers by requiring people to have minimum insurance company. But now they're saying it's okay to require Americans to have minimum coverage.
Well, we're going to keep having differing opinions, I think, until we get rid of Obama. And then every GOP candidate so far has vowed to totally get rid of that particular bill right off the bat, first thing in out of the bat. And so,
well, if you remember when Obama was running for president, he lambasted Clinton for saying, well, your health care plan is to require people to have insurance or pay a penalty, and they still don't have insurance. And then it turns out this is exactly the plan that they have.
Yeah. Well, I don't know why he did it that way. And usually everybody else, every other country has mandatory health coverage too, but they don't make you pay for it. They just tax it.
Yeah, I mean, taxes are higher, but you get something directly back from it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. If you have an opinion on this, 646-721-9887, or again, like I say, join us in the chat room. We'd love to hear from you.
Somebody must have an opinion on it, because a lot of people are talking about it, and it's just something's got to change. That's just all there is to it. Again, I think it's all going to happen in 2012, because every GOP candidate is talking about changing it and making big changes in what's going on. So
right, and remember, it has to be a qualified health coverage. You just can't have any type of health coverage and expect to escape the penalties.
Okay, I don't understand.
In other words, the federal government has set minimum standards for the health coverage that you have to have. And if your health coverage does not meet that, then they won't see it as actually having health coverage. Or
you're saying that's if you buy your own.
Right.
You know, if we're going to do this, let's do it right, because as far as I'm concerned, we should just get out of this whole trip and have socialized... Oh, stop that.
Welcome to live radio.
I accidentally clicked on the wrong place and went away from it and said, come back. So, and every time you do, you have to sign in again.
Get away from the computer.
Really?
No, you know, our president and first lady can't even figure out how to do the Pledge of Allegiance with the right hand. They use their their left. And there's a picture of them doing the pledge with their left hand, both of them. I mean, it's just embarrassing.
Are you sure the picture first?
And what's that?
I heard something when they did the something with the Pledge of Allegiance that they bleeped out under God or something like that. We're getting so crazy.
That too. This picture hasn't been doctored or anything. It's really obvious that they didn't know what they're doing.
Well, that doesn't surprise me one bit. But at least one thing that is slightly encouraging, even though President Obama in his own mind thinks he's doing a really great job, whenever he has any of those fundraisers, like there was one a couple weeks ago, that there was room for 2,400 people and only 900 show up.
Oh, boy.
And I don't hear people chanting on the street saying, four more years either.
Really?
You know, talk about, you know, how the government wants to make sure that we're doing everything that's best for us. How Michelle Obama is telling everybody they need to eat better while she eats, you know, French fries and milkshakes every day and craves them. But yet she's on TV making sure all of our kids are supposed to be eating better.
Well, that's something I don't understand, is just because you're the president's wife, I mean, first of all, it doesn't make you an expert in anything.
No.
I mean, she can go ahead and say, let's eat better, or let's have good dental hygiene or whatever. Fine, go ahead and do your public service announcements, your PSA, but leave the rest of us alone.
Exactly.
Unfortunately, just because you're president doesn't make you an expert in anything either.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I like my trans fats.
Well, you know, I can understand them making rules about manufacturers trying to cut down on trans fats and things like that. And I can understand them putting little labels on all of our food and telling us how many trans fats are there so we can make an intelligent decision about things. But that's as far as it should go. It should not go to the point that they can tell us what we can eat and what we can't eat.
Oh, I agree. But like say, we're becoming, you know, a nanny country. And I think this year or this presidential term, more than any others, have really emphasized the amount of loss of freedoms that we've had. The more controls, and also thanks to the TSA. And speaking of the TSA, I guess Texas has passed what they call a no-groping policy after... What was she, 98 years old when they made her take off the ID?
Yeah. That's just pathetic.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we're just getting too carried away, and it's just it's got to stop. That's why, you know, actually, if you want to get right down to it, we should be electing Ron Paul. Of all of the candidates that are available, we should be electing Ron Paul, because he's the one who wants to and voices the fact that he wants to radically cut down what our government does to us and for us and so on and so forth, and to leave it up to the American public. I mean, we are the only country who has had those freedoms, and here we are chopping them down. And, you know, the Democratic regime as it stands is doing horrible things about that. They're fast trying to pass every possible bill they can to make sure that the federal government controls everything, every part of our life, and we've got to get out of that and get back to having something left for us to control. Either that or we're going to start having rioting in the streets. I'm sorry, but it's going to happen.
Oh, I don't think that'll happen unless it has something to do with football.
Well, you realize the Dodgers just declared bankruptcy the other day. Did you know that?
Oh, my God. Well, I better... get some 2x2s out so we can start making signs.
Yeah, whatever. Well, the bankruptcy of the L.A. Dodgers is a little different story, though. It's because the owner of the Dodgers and his wife are in a messy divorce, and she wants to take him for everything she can get. And consequently, and he's doesn't want the whole team up for grabs, I guess, although... the baseball league is still up in arms about the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that people just, unless it affects them personally, they don't get involved in politics. And these last couple of years, you know, with the formation of the Tea Party, more and more people are getting involved because it's affecting their wallet, it's affecting their freedoms, it's affecting their jobs. Like in Oregon here, the state keeps coming up with more ideas to raise money, but they had one little flaw. Like I'll cite an example, Measure 6667, which is supposed to be the cure-all for schools and everything. Based on current income levels is what they were predicting it with. The problem was is that their current income levels were flawed because a lot of businesses and people have left the state. So there's not enough people here to generate the predicted revenue.
You want to know something else? We're going to have that same problem. We're going to have a lot of big major businesses leaving the country because we are so insistent. Our federal employees or the administration keeps saying, you know, we've got to have more manufacturing, more actual manufacturing in the United States. We can't manufacture things in the United States if we can't be competitive with other countries, and we can't be competitive with other countries if we have to keep paying the kind of wages that we're paying. And the Obama administration has already showed us that he's on the side of all of these unions, and the unions right at the moment, and I'm not saying that they have never done anything good for us, because they obviously have, but at this particular point, to make the unions a requirement, a required thing to have, is wrong, because you know, they're saying that Boeing can't open their plant in South Carolina because of the fact that they're going there to get rid of the unions or to get away from the unions. And that's, of course, what they're doing. I lived in Washington State. I lived through some of the huge, very long strikes that the unions made against Boeing. And I know what kind of troubles. And because of that, the wages in Boeing have gone sky high. I mean, Boeing pays huge amounts of money. I don't know if you know it. There are people in Boeing making $45 and $46 and $47 an hour at this particular time because of the unions. And they could go to South Carolina and cut that almost in half and make their airplanes for significantly less money and make us competitive in the world, because we're going to have to be competitive with people like Airbus from France. But more to the point, China is entering into this. China is now making an airplane, and they're going to be very, very competitive, obviously, because they don't have to pay anywhere near the kind of money we're paying. And so consequently, Boeing has to be considering what's going on, and by doing that, by considering all of this, they made the decision to move to South Carolina. And now our federal government is telling them they have to hire union people there. And that isn't up to our federal government to do. And we've got to get out of this business of, and I know, you know, again, you can tell why, because the unions spent a lot of money supporting Obama to put him into office. And now he owes them, and he's trying very hard to pay them back. Well, that's not up to the president to do. We have wrong things going on here, and wrong people in power. We've got to change all of that. And I'm thinking it's going to change in 2012. Whether we can afford to live that long, I don't know.
Well, and part of the, to go along our support with what you're saying, is that we keep making it more expensive for companies to operate. I mean, like, again, back to the Obama healthcare plan. Companies are really concerned about how much that's going to cost their bottom line, because they're going to be required to provide it.
Yeah.
Also, this issue of, and same thing with local governments here, is government is short on money. Their answer is to raise taxes and fees. Well, like I've said, the money tree is getting pretty thin. You know, they can't absorb that anymore. And every time they do raise taxes and fees on businesses, well, it gets passed down to the consumer. And the consumer is really, really hurting. So where does it stop? And then one thing I wanted to throw out there real quick is, as you know, Congress is talking about raising the debt limit. Well, raising the debt limit is kind of like raising your credit limit on your credit card. And one of the things that any money manager will tell you, that's one thing you don't want to do, is when you max out your credit cards, is to go in and have your credit limit raised, because all that's going to do is get you even more in trouble.
Absolutely. You always spend up to your credit limit. or your debt ceiling, or whatever you want to call it. And we're already overspent. We're borrowing money from one country, particularly, well, I'll mention China because everybody does, but we're borrowing money from some people to make war on other people. And that doesn't make any sense. Our defense budget is the largest thing we have in our budget system, and it takes up half, at least half, of our entire national budget. And we've got to get that down. I mean, if you just count the actual defense budget, which is put on the paper as to be part of the defense budget, is $699 billion. But that's not all that it is. That leaves out a whole bunch of things that are part of defense, different bills we pay, the amount we pay our troops, and on and on and on. And so it comes up to over $1 trillion a year. And here's this ridiculous part. When they passed the last budget, the Democrats in the House and Senate gave them more money than the president even asked for, which was an increase. He increased it by 6.5%, and they gave him another, I think it was $30 billion more than that. And we're just, I don't know what kind of crazy people we are in the United States about this defense budget. I don't believe for a minute that spending money in Egypt and giving Egypt and all these people billions of dollars is actually to our benefit. I really don't think it is. I understand that it makes them happy with us and makes them friendly with us, and that's great to have friends, but I don't believe that the kind of friends that you buy are the kinds of friends that we need.
Well, and what are we sacrificing at home here? Like, for example, on the 24th, did you know that there was a armed convoy that actually crossed our borders into the United States?
No, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, there was three military trucks armed crossed into the United States at bridge number 2 from the Mexican border. And what's really interesting is when they got to this side, the Customs and Border Protection inspectors didn't know what to do about it.
Well, what do you do? We're not at war, supposedly, so consequently, what do you do when you see military armed?
Well, yeah, but the point is, let's just say for a moment that, well, first of all, these troops claim that they were lost. Nobody's buying that one, but let's just say for the moment that somebody did decide to bring a regiment over the bridge. I mean, it would be so easy to invade this country at the moment because all of our defenses are elsewhere. I mean, it's like a chess game in a sense. All your pawns and other chess pieces are over protecting your king, which opens the board for somebody to sneak through.
Yeah, we need to do something about Mexico. I do find that we have a problem with Mexico, and we aren't addressing it at all. And I don't know if, you know, more troops across on the border would help. I understand that there is a problem, of course, with bringing all of our troops home from abroad, everywhere abroad, because we're talking about hundreds of thousands of people. Our unemployment rate is extremely high as it is. And if we bring hundreds of thousands more people over here without jobs, which is what we would be doing, it's going to raise it even higher. So, but in my opinion, if we're going to be, you know, spending $699 billion, let's bring the people home and just give them the money for a while and until we can work out making jobs for people. Because if we bring them all home, and then we start actually doing commerce and letting companies build their businesses in the United States and equalizing wages so that they can be competitive in the United States, then the jobs will be there and the we don't have to pay them anymore. But we're paying the troops now to be overseas. Let's bring them home and pay them at home instead.
Yeah, and as for the border between U.S. and Mexico, here's a radical idea. We don't hesitate to go over to other countries when their people are crying for help and stick our nose in it. Well, the reason why we got 20 million illegal aliens over here is because of conditions in their own country. So 20 million people, in a sense, are crying for help. So let's go over there and do our thing to help Mexico like we do all the other countries And maybe that'll also help our border situation.
Well, unfortunately, Mexico says no.
Well, maybe some of those other countries said no, too. Maybe it's time to overthrow their president.
Well, actually, no, I think almost every country we've gone into has said, please help us, or at least give us money. Mexico is asking us to stay out. Are we giving federal aid to Mexico? I don't know if we are. We've got a significant amount of trade, and we're buying a significant amount of their oil. But even with that, there are ways that we could stop doing that, too, if we needed to. But I don't want to go to war with Mexico over this whole thing if we don't have to, and I don't think we have to. But we do need to bring our people home and get out of this business. First of all, like in Libya, we never should have been in Libya. We shouldn't be in Libya now. And regardless, and Syria and all these other countries over there, we're going to get in all of these places. We can't do this. We can't control the whole world, and that's what we're obviously trying to do, and we've got to stop doing that.
Yeah. Well, Bradley, you look like you're biting your lip. Feel free to jump in here anytime.
He left.
No, I'm here. I'm so enthralled by your guys' conversation.
Right.
Good stuff.
Really? I don't know about that, but anyway. No, we've got to do something about the federal government and where we're spending our money as far as our military is concerned, because it's got to come home. It can't be continued spending over there. We talk in terms of billions of dollars. You know, we talk in terms, even Egypt. We cut back, and we're still giving $1 billion. How many billions of dollars are we spending in Libya right now? I mean, granted, supposedly we don't have any troops on the ground, but so what? We're financing every other part of it, and including using our aircraft and everything else. Let these people predict. We've got enough trouble with our government telling us what we can do with our lives. Why are we letting our government tell other countries what they can do with their lives? We need to let everybody take care of themselves.
No, I agree. And speaking of taking care of ourselves, how about giving us a call? Cliff, you want to give it out?
It's 646-721-9887. That's easy to remember, 646-721-9887. We got to have, somebody has to have an opinion about where we're spending our money or how we're spending our money. And maybe you have an opinion about who's going to be in charge of how we spend our money next, because we've got this big GOP campaign going on, and there are people who are, I guess as you use the word, qualified to be president, and there are people who are not. The big thing when we had the debate here a couple weeks back, somebody on stage said that everybody on the stage was more qualified to be president than the current president is. I don't know that I agree with that. There are some people who think they are, but then our president, current president, thought he was qualified before he found out what he got into. People don't know what this job entails. Well, the job of being president is a lot more involved and a lot more concentrated than most of these people think. These people get up there and they have all these great ideas and they spout off about all these great ideas, but they really don't know. So I'm thoroughly convinced there's really only two people in the GOP campaign, one specifically, and that's Newt Gingrich, who really knows what it means to be president. Gingrich has been around for years and years and years. He was involved with Reagan, he was involved with Clinton, he was involved with all these people, and he was not just involved, he was integrally, closely involved. Let's put it that way. Because he's the one who put together the contract for America. He's the one, he's the only one under his guidance. He's the only time that we've had a balanced budget. It wasn't Clinton who did it. It was Newt Gingrich who did it with Clinton's help. Clinton signed the bill, yes, but Newt Gingrich wrote it. And so you know, he's the only one, in my opinion, that's qualified to be president right now. He is the only one who understands what's involved in being president. He's the only one who has been there and seen what is involved in being president. And he has ideas. He's been able to already, in his campaigning, just what little campaigning he's done, he has been able to voice his ideas and how he can fix things. There are two or three people up on the stage that are in position of running for president now who actually have ideas. The rest of them are just spouting philosophy and I don't know what I want to call it, and be trying to be nice without being real nasty about the whole thing. But they don't know what they're talking about, including Mitt Romney, in my opinion. He has never been there. He is not a politician that knows what's going on. He hasn't spent any time really in the White House. Maybe he has lots and lots of money, but that hasn't put him in a position to know what's happening. Newt Gingrich has money. He doesn't have lots and lots of it, but he has money. It's not like he's broke.
Well, you know, one analogy that somebody made is the government's view on the real situation. Like, for example, the president walks up to the window in the Oval Office and, you know, the only thing he sees is lush lawns, you know, good hedges and everything. Everything looks all fine and peachy king. And but on the other side of the hedge, you know, you got people sleeping on the benches. Things aren't as rosy. And I think that is part of the issue, especially with people who've been in government for a long period of time, is they're not really directly connected anymore to the real society.
See, and there's a place where I, again, come back to Newt Gingrich, because Newt Gingrich resigned from his government position in 1998, I believe it was. And he is not in the Senate or the House. He is not part of the government. He actually has to get out there and earn a living and do things on his own. And so he's lived both sides. He's been a professor. He's taught. He has written 23 books. You know, so obviously he knows how to do that. And he's made his living on his own. He's not doing it off the federal dole, so to speak, at this particular point in time. And yet he still has the recognition and he's been there, done that position of having been in the government and knows how things work and has worked with other presidents. And so he knows whether this president is doing it right or wrong or indifferent. And we've got to have somebody that knows the position, somebody who's been on the inside. Whether they are now or not doesn't make any difference. Somebody who's been on the inside and knows what it takes to do the job. And he's the only one of all of them. And the other one that I think knows a little bit about it, but very little, would be, believe it or not, she's not even running, Sarah Palin. I mean, she supposedly should know a little bit about it because she was dragged in by the Republican Party and against her. I was going to say against her will. I don't think it was against her will, but I don't think she knew what she was in for until she got there and was rudely awakened and then dropped and left on her butt by the GOP. So,
yeah. Now Palin is one that I would vote for, just if nothing else. I mean, one, she's different. She seems like she's got some spunk out there, and because she's been governor, she's got some idea about what's going on in government.
Well, interestingly enough, also notice what she's done. She was brought in by the GOP, and put in that position, and then just dropped. I mean, she was literally dropped on her butt, but and left on be on her own. And she has recuperated. She has recovered. She has actually gone out and has done huge things, and she's doing it all on her own. She's not stupid. She's very, very bright, obviously, and she's bright in the right way because she's coming up with ways to make enough money to do what she needs to do, and she's making enough inroads and enough noise that people are listening to her. I mean, how many other people would come up with a bus and do a whole campaign trip and she's not even running for anything? I mean, she's just telling people about her and talk about, you know, whether she's setting herself up for 4 years or 6 years from now or whatever she's doing. I think she's going to be successful at it. And I'm totally amazed at the lady. I ready or not, I think she's absolutely brilliant.
Well, except for Donald Trump, that kind of played everybody. Kind of had fun, but there's a lot of people that thought Trump would have made a good president just because he, you know, is a CEO of a large corporation, despite...
If you had listened to what Trump said, you'd know good and well that he wouldn't make a good CEO. He was, his foreign policy was just stupidity.
Well, like they haven't done stupid things already.
Oh yeah, we have. No, but I mean, he was even more. I mean, I listened to a couple of the speeches where he was talking about foreign policy. Granted, I think he was doing it all tongue in cheek, because I think he knew at that time he wasn't going to run. But whether it was tongue in cheek or not, the man is he is not stupid either. There's no doubt in my mind about that. You don't come up, because he's done the same thing that Sarah Palin is doing. He's done the name recognition thing for a lot longer than she's done it. I don't think he's gotten any further as far as name recognition than she has, and she's done it a lot quicker, so she's doing a better job of it. But he still has done it, and he's done it over the years between buying and selling things, and then also doing his television thing. He's more interested in promoting him than he is in anything else. I mean, you watch what he's doing on TV and all that sort of stuff. He's not helping the United States. He's interested in promoting Donald Trump, and that's all.
Exactly. And I'm interested in promoting us. 646-721-9887, or join us in the chat room. But let me throw this out here to the panel. What in your mind would actually make good qualifications for president? Now, one of the things that I want to throw out there, I'll start it off, is what I get tired of hearing. I mean, yes, it's an important debate, but what they debate this every presidential term is abortion. Abortion and how they feel about religion. It's like, sure, that's important, but I think there's more important things that they should be concerned about at the moment. I'll start it off with Pastor Bradley.
Well, you know, there are lots of other things that are important too, but I think from my point of view, I think it starts with, in a lot of people's minds, the religious viewpoints of the candidate. Just look at history of all the other presidents in that same situation, the same question you're asking, is something that's always going to be top priority list. But to me, it makes a lot of sense to have somebody be president that knows a lot about business, how to make a successful business happen, somebody that has had experience in human resources and things like that. And that's why I like Michelle Bachmann. Her and her husband have a lot of successful businesses in the healthcare field, being the mental health care field, and a lot of great things they've done in business. So I think she has a lot going for her in that respect.
Okay.
Well, see, I have to disagree totally and absolutely. First of all, abortion is not even under consideration. It is just not under consideration. The laws are already made. The laws have already been passed. We have laws about abortion, and we need to let it rest finally. Of course, the fact that the religious part of our country is not going to let it rest because it doesn't agree with them, that's neither here nor there. It's not up to them to make the decision. But they're going to keep bringing it up. The presidential candidates should not be bringing it up. They should leave it out of their rhetoric entirely. There's everything in the world that should be ahead of that. Jobs would be something that would be way ahead of abortion. The debt limit, the debt ceiling, the amount of money we're spending, our budget, that should be way ahead of abortion. Military spending, the fact that we're trying to run the entire world, that should be ahead of abortion. Everything, almost everything, should be ahead of abortion. But because it's already been solved, it's already been the public has made their opinion known. And I know that the religious side of people have been trying over the years to change that, but they haven't been able to come up with enough people and on their side to do it. So consequently, it's about time that they just kind of stop. Now, they have that choice. They don't have to do that. So they should be working on their people, on their constituents, or if you wish, their audience, to what they individually want to do, because every person has a position that they can make up their own mind whether they want to or not. We don't need.
I'd have to be in 100% agreement with what Cliff just said. I think that's very important.
Exactly, and that's kind of the point that I was making, is that, you know, abortion is a personal thing, but to have it as a main category on a presidential election, with so many other things that I don't want to say is more important, because I don't want to compare them that way, but there's so many other things to the health of our country that need to be considered than whether or not somebody believes in abortion or not.
Well, you know what I think? We have already decided, and we already have laws and everything against bringing religion into the schools and religionists into the public positions. We need to, if we're going to do this, either get rid of all of that and allow religion everywhere, or we need to make that rule, that law or whatever, all-inclusive, and say that you can't bring religion into the political arena either. We need to get the presidential candidates out of the religious business and just being more involved with us and more involved with the country. Because I don't care what they believe. I don't care if they're Catholic or Muslim or what they are. I don't care what they believe. As long as they're not the militant Muslims that are out to get us, then they can believe anything they want to. But don't tell us about it. Just keep it to yourself. If you want to pray, go in the you don't have to go into another room. You can pray, but just do it silently.
Well, you're right. It doesn't need to be a public issue, you know, because your religion, whichever it is it's personal, basically.
Well, the Bible's very clear about prayer. You are to go into your prayer closet or somewhere where people don't see you. It is a very personal thing, and you know, there's a difference, obviously, when you go to a house of worship. You pray publicly together, but I'm really against, as a pastor, people having to be seen praying on the corners and this and that, and because to me it's biblically, it's not what God intended it for that to be.
And the U.S. Senate is not a house of worship.
No, exactly.
Consequently, and NBC and Fox and all of those are not houses of worship. So we should and don't think you need to hide what you are, but you don't need to promote it either necessarily.
Well, I don't.
And on the other hand, it sure is funny how when tragedy happens to us in the states, or you know, how quickly they decide to turn to prayer. That's what irritates me.
You know, our country was founded on that, and why we're trying to stay away from it, I don't know. There are times when it is time to pray. You know, let's face it, when you're being inundated by hurricane whatever it was, Katrina, maybe that's a time to pray. But you still do it personally. You don't do it on television and try to get everybody to pray with you, because maybe they pray differently than you do. And consequently, it's up to them to decide how they want to do it.
Well, I have proof that the majority of people in Congress believe in God. And that is because some of the stuff that they pass, you can just hear them going, "Oh, my God!"
Yeah,
my point is I don't believe half of them that profess this profound belief in God are being honest with us. I do believe that 98% of the people in government today are not being honest with us about almost anything, let alone that. So why should I think they're being honest about how their beliefs are? They're just spouting off because it's the end thing to do now, and consequently that's what we're going to find out. And we don't need to know that. So,
well, absolutely. I mean, if you think about it, like the party, the two-party system right now, there is no party allegiance per se as there used to be, you know, a long time ago. They're basically in it for themselves. Why else do they run?
Well, you know, that's how do I want to say that? Sort of our fault. They're in it. Once they get into the office, they find out that they have to spend too much of their time coming up with enough money to stay in the office, and that's we're not giving our politicians the possibility of of actually sitting down and doing any work because of the fact that they – that's why I say we should limit them all to one or two terms of office, possibly even just one, so that when you get in there, make it a four-year term of office, no matter what, and then they can't run again, because you know that way they could spend their entire 4 years in there actually trying to do something for the people that they're pledging to help or work for, instead of trying to pledge for getting more money and let other people give everybody a chance.
That's one of the drawbacks. There's a lot of people who are really qualified and educated for the job, but unless you're good at fundraising or can come up with the millions of dollars it takes, and that's one of the problems, I think, like you just mentioned, to even consider running for office, you know, we're missing out on some really good talent. And in fact, on that note, because apparently, you know, to run for president, you have to have good cash-raising skills. How about using that cash-raising skills to kind of help with our deficit?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, I don't think we need to use the cash-raising skills to help with the deficit. We have the money. We have the money right now. There's a lot of things going on that people don't realize. Do you realize we are still making gold dollars? We have $1 billion worth of gold dollars sitting around at the mint that nobody wants, but they're still making them. Nobody wants them. So they either need to pass a law that gets rid of the dollar bill, because that's what they're upset about. The dollar bill doesn't last very long, and gold dollars do. The problem is, of course, the gold dollars are the same size as quarters. And you screw up and miss and use them wrong and use them as quarters, and you're out 75 cents. I mean, it's a big thing if you're doing it much. And so consequently, I understand we can get rid of the dollar bill, but we're spending our money in wrong places. It doesn't make any sense to have $1 billion worth of gold dollars laying around. Let's either make them useful or get rid of them, one or the other. But we're spending our money in stupid ways, and we're just keep spending it. There doesn't need to be a spending list. We can cut back in the defense. There's probably several billion ways that we can cut back, and then we wouldn't have to increase taxes. We wouldn't have to worry about going out and making more money, because we would have enough money to do what we're doing. And this goes not just for the federal government. It goes for the state governments and regional governments as well. We need to be able to set up a budget and live with it, not just keep asking for more taxes. And everybody's doing it. The state of Oregon's doing it. The city of Cottage Grove is doing it. Everybody's just asking for more taxes so that they have more money to spend. And the more money they spend, the more taxes they ask for, so they have more money to spend. We've got to start going the other way. We've got to start putting our money to work instead of just trying to figure out how to make more.
Well, getting back to the presidential election, but I totally agree with you, by the way. That needs to be looked at in the same light. Here's a good example for the rapid transit district rapid transit bus, otherwise known as EMX in the Eugene area. The Eugene is scrambling to get past the opponents that are really become vocal on that bus, but they're doing it because there's federal tax money out there. That's the only reason why they want to put the lanes in. I think it's like $20 billion or more than that. I don't know the exact figure, but they haven't shown a need. The people have come out and said, we at least would like a vote on it. The city council says, nope, not going to do it. Not going to allow you to have an opinion in that regard. We're just going to do it, period. But having a bus, a special bus put in an area where there's already bus service, is not something, in my opinion, that's feasible or a high priority. And I guess what I'm trying to say is that if the government spent their money like you and I would on a tight budget, you know, I only make so much money a month. I don't make that much. So spending it on, I don't know, feel-good things like taking my car down to the car wash and spending $10 doesn't happen. I get the hose out because I can't afford it.
You know, I know what you're saying, and I sit back and I look at things, and I lived in the Bay Area for a while, a long time ago when they first decided to go for the Bay Area Rapid Transit, BART. I lived there before BART existed, and I lived there when they first started voting on things and decided to do BART, and when they started to come up with the property and everything. And I voted for BART because I thought it was a great idea. A lot of people didn't like the idea of BART, first of all, because it went all the way around the bay, and at one point it goes under the bay, and everybody decided, well, that's bad because we know earthquakes happen in San Francisco Bay Area, and so if an earthquake happened, that tunnel under the bay, of course, would collapse, and BART would be worthless and useless. But BART was a great idea. BART is being used, I mean, hugely being used, by the way. And when it came around to having the big earthquake, BART was the only thing that continued to run. The tunnel did not collapse. BART was the only thing that went across the bay. Everything else collapsed. And so there is something to be said about insight of looking ahead and looking into the future. But I'm not convinced that in the city of Eugene that this is what they're doing properly, because people in Eugene want to drive their cars, and we don't have the huge space requirements. San Francisco Bay Area is different than up here. We have enough room to build highways and freeways and roads and things, and we have decent roads and highways. They're not decent because they need to be fixed and things like that, but they're wide enough and big enough if we didn't have buses in the middle of them that were taking up half of them. But the point is, people up here want to use their cars. So we need to be fixing the roads and widening the roads and making the roads easier to use rather than taking up part of that.
Yeah, I agree with you, but my point, I was just using the bus as an example. My point was about the priorities and spending in a tight budget era. And was it on the news that Ben Bernanke came out and said that he's kind of confused that why we're really haven't got out of the recession yet, why the economy is not recovering?
That's why he should be removed from that position. He is confused, and he doesn't know what's going on, and he's the one making the rules and making the decisions. And so if he has already come out and admitted that he's confused, then he shouldn't be the one making decisions. There should be somebody else in there. And there's got to be somebody qualified to know what to do. For one, I would consider Ron Paul. He's criticized the Federal Reserve Board many times, and he's made suggestions of how to change it. Somebody suggested the other day to change to just get rid of the Federal Reserve, and because all they do is print money, and we've already printed all the money, and we've printed the money, and that's going to take us under. Is you can't just print money; you have to have something back up.
But it also gets back to, like I've said many times, the government isn't taking the recession seriously, which is why they keep adding more stuff onto us. Look at the stimulus package, for example. And, you know, when Obama first announced that, he said that there was going to be an oversight committee to make sure that states don't spend it frivolously. Well, how many jobs does it create when a state spends the money to track the migration habits of a snail?
Well, you see, Obama has already admitted that that $600 billion didn't work, and now they want to do it again or do something similar. And so we've got that's all boiled down to the fact that we've got to make it stop. We've got to make it stop. We've got to stop printing money. I mean, we borrowed so much money from China and various sundry places, and we ran out of borrowing power, so now we just print money out of thin air. And so consequently, the people who print the money, we can just close that department, and then we don't owe anybody that money. It just goes away.
Right.
And
right.
So, I mean, we have the ability to do that. As far as, there are ways of just everybody's worried about the debt ceiling and the fact that the federal government's going to shut down. The federal government's not going to shut down. They're not going to allow that to happen. But it did happen one time, and the one person, again, who took us out of it and has been through that is Newt Gingrich. He was there. He was a part of it. And so he should be the one who should be a part of it again, because he knows what the results are, and he knows how to handle it. And again, I'm back to, I just can't get away from pushing the fact that he should be our next president, and he should be our next president next week, not 2 years from now, because we've got to get this one out of there.
And getting out of there, we have 24 minutes remaining in the program, 646-721-9887. We've had a couple people come in and out of the chat room. Be sure to join us there if you'd like to go on your two cents, or better yet, give us a call, 646-721-9887. Pastor Bradley, do you have any stimulating words on anything?
Well, I was I hate to keep harping on Michelle Bachmann, but have either of you looked into her qualifications or done any research in her life or anything like that yet?
I have, to a certain extent. What do you want to bring?
Well, I don't know. I just wanted to hear your input on, you know, maybe her qualifications compared to Sarah, or compared to, if she was in office, compared to Obama right now. I mean, what do you see?
To be honest with you, not a great deal. I don't think she, if you compare her to Sarah Palin, I think she's just as qualified, if not more. She has more experience as to what goes on in the federal offices than Sarah Palin does. But I don't find her any more creative or any more intelligent than Sarah Palin. As far as Obama is concerned, I do feel that she could do a much better job than Obama does, because I am becoming more and more convinced that Obama is not working for us, he's working against us. And unfortunately, I hate to say that, because I just can't believe that we have somebody we've elected a president that's doing that. But there are only three people, in my opinion, that are really capable of doing the job of presidents, and that's Ron Paul, Newt Gingrich, and my mind is gone. But there are only basically, and Mitt Romney is not necessarily one of them. One of the things that's happening, if you look at it very closely and you start looking at anybody who's running for president at the moment, you'll find that they are more and more and more coming in line with Ron Paul's ideas. Ron Paul's ideas, which were 5, 6, and 8, and 10 years ago, were radical. They were impossible to even think about. But nowadays, Ron Paul's ideas, Ron Paul hasn't changed his opinions, hasn't changed his ideas, but everybody else has. And they're coming along and coming around to Ron Paul's way of thinking. Unfortunately, Ron Paul is getting along in years and is not going to be able to keep running for president forever. So I don't think he's probably going to be president. However, there is a possibility his son might. But in the meantime, again, in my opinion, Newt Gingrich is the one that fills in. Newt has so much more, you know, Bachmann has some experience, and she has been in the position of national and been in the national offices, and she understands what's going on, and I'm sure she spent time with the president, a couple of presidents, and understands a little bit more about it than most people do. But
was openly against the healthcare thing, the 105.
She actually stated in the debate that the first thing she would do is go in there and end all of those Obama rules and laws that he's passed while in office. She would just negate all of them, as has almost everybody on the stage. All seven candidates up there did that. But I find her probably the third best qualified of the people up there. But Ron Paul, if I had a possibility and thought it would work, would be the one I would vote for. And you know, interestingly enough, people are very adamant about Ron Paul. People are, you mentioned it, I think, Rob, and somebody mentioned about this graffiti on the freeway overpasses and things like that. We're back to all of those things. Ron Paul has this huge following of people that are very, very devoted and very adamant about what they want, and they don't mind going out and doing things like that. He declared his position for president, that he was going to run for president again, and the day that he declared it, he raised $1 million that day.
Well, let me throw something out here real quick here. This is on Michelle Bachmann, which I find kind of interesting. What we were talking about earlier, the 2012 incandescent light bulb ban, Bachmann introduced the what's called the Light Bulb Freedom of Choice Act. Now, who would ever think that we in the U.S. would have to have an act for the freedom of light bulbs?
Yeah.
I think those light bulbs should be free.
Especially dating them, you know.
That's right. You know, the repression of the light bulb. They're so incandescent. She also has commented that the global warming is a, she feels global warming is a hoax and is very skeptical about it.
Well, I disagree with that. I don't think we're doing it, but global warming is very real, and we are actually going about this in the right place. We have, I saw the other day, and I don't remember exactly what it was because I didn't write it down, but we do have a group in the Senate or someplace that is looking into how to deal with global warming, because global warming is going to happen, and it is happening. It is not the human beings on the earth that are doing it. It's just a cycle. It's a 1,500-year cycle. And so we don't have to worry about not making it happen. What we have to do is worry about how to live through it. And one of those things is, you know, we've got all these different flooding and different things going on in the world. This is all a part of this global warming, whether we like it or not. And so we're going to have to learn how to live around it or through it or whatever you want to call it, because it's going to happen. As far as I'm concerned, you can't just say it's a hoax. It's not a hoax. It's happening.
Well, yeah, the global warming versus the global warming.
Cliff, what do you think it would take to get Ron Paul or Newt to be elected president?
Well, I think Newt is actually going to be elected, to be honest with you. He has, I don't know if you're aware of it, but Newt Gingrich actually he's number, and on all the polls at this point, excuse me, put him as number three. He's quite a ways down, but I don't think Newt Gingrich is a possibility of being elected. He is way up at the top of the poll. He's at 23, and Sarah Palin, of all people, is 22. She's second, but Newt Gingrich is third. I don't think that Mitt Romney is going to do it. He's going to do the same thing as he did last time, and I don't know what he did to take himself out of the running, but he did it, and I think he'll do it again. He doesn't have the experience. Not that he's not intelligent, not that he's not good enough. I mean, he has run the state, and I think he's done a good job of running the state. He's made some mistakes, but he's admitted to them, at least, more than our current president, who never admits to anything. But he has at least admitted to them, and as learned from them, by the way, at least he says he has, and has sort of indicated he has. But I don't know if I'm ready to put him in as the president. But the one person who has the qualifications is Newt Gingrich. He's been there. He's done that. He's been there long enough. He understands the economy. He understands. I haven't heard too much out of him about national defense, other than the fact that he does believe in bringing our troops home and not spending as much on national defense. Granted, there are places where we need to spend some money, but not nearly what we're doing. We don't need to be as aggressive about going out and trying to take over other countries as what we're doing. We're going out there and we're helping, and we don't even know who we're helping. We don't even know who the resurgents are in most of these countries. So we're doing this blind, which is just totally stupid, but that's what we're doing.
And speaking of Newt, this is off his Twitter page. It's kind of an interesting article, I guess. I think he's over-exaggerating. Millionaires eligible to collect food stamps, thanks to the Obama administration.
Well, they are. It has nothing to do with how much money you have. It has to do with how much money you're making at the moment. So if you're a millionaire who doesn't have a job, you're eligible.
Well, that's true.
And unfortunately, the food stamp people, I've been worried about, I've wondered, shall we say, about this a few years ago when they were advertising for students for example, to go to the schools in the summertime and get free lunches and stuff like that, where you know, they were out there advocating to they were trying to spend all that free government money. Instead of saving anything anywhere, they're spending it as much as possible. And so we've got a lot of people, individual people, local people, and who are not broke or not even poor, who are getting free lunches and things. A lot of this on the dole type of thing. And so we need to revisit how we're giving out our free money, but and make sure that it's going to people who need it, not just to anybody who wants it. And so, or if we're going to go to anybody who wants it, we need to figure out a different way to come up with it. So, but again, it's not a concern. You know, this business about the one thing, you know, the rich people paying more taxes or less taxes, the thing we've got to worry about is the tax system, the tax program, and taking the loopholes out. That's where Ron Paul and Newt Gingrich both have the idea. They want to take the loopholes out. They don't want to just tax big business more money and, you know, make their tax rate higher. It doesn't make any difference how high you take the tax rate. At one time, we had big businesses paying 90% tax rate. They didn't pay it. They were just it was part of that was their rate. Of course, they're not going to pay it. They have ways of getting around paying anything. So let's don't take let's not change the tax rate. Let's not change how much they're supposed to pay. Let's take the loopholes away and change how much they do pay. It doesn't have to be very much. If you're a billionaire, a 10% of a billionaire or 5% of a billionaire is a lot of money, as opposed to 90% of a billionaire who's paying nothing. So we've got to change the system, not how much we assess their taxes to be. We've got to work our way to get them to pay it. GE is not going to get upset about paying 1 or 2% taxes, but they are going to get upset about paying 50% taxes, and so they're not going to do it. And they've got ways around it. So we're looking at the wrong attack. Ron Paul and Newt Gingrich, and I don't know about Bachman at this particular point, and her tax thing.
Well, and one of the things that Newt is, I guess, proposing too is, and I kind of go along with this one, is that the federal government needs to be audited.
Absolutely, absolutely.
As he says here, needs to be audited. We have a right to know who's got our money.
Well, again, that's I couldn't agree more. But not only do we have a right to know who's got our money, we have a right to determine how they spend it. And that's what we're working on at the moment, is how they spend it, because they're not being good guardians of not only just our money, but our, I mean, look at how many young people are being killed every day in all of these wars that we've got going on, or they aren't wars because we don't declare war. And we don't need to do that. They don't need to be used that way. We don't need to send our troops into, you know, we say, well, we've got to sit back and listen to the generals and find out what they think. No, they're not being killed. We need to just bring our people home and have it over with. We need to be very, very, very frugal and meager with how we spend American lives, and we're not. We're just throwing people away, and we've got to stop that.
Well, I agree with you 1,000%. Like I say, it's real easy to sit there in your nice, clean office and send people to go get dirty, so to speak.
Yeah. Exactly, and that's what they're doing. They're killing off our young people, and we can't let that happen. And yet we seem to be condoning it. We keep putting more and more money into defense, and we've got to stop doing that. We've got to bring the people home. If we want to bring them home and pay them to do nothing here, or pay them to be our police force or whatever, that's fine. We can just use the money in a different place, but let's not send them over there to get killed instead of bringing them home and just giving them money. You know, it's not the money that it is the money that I'm concerned about. And the thing is, if we bring them home and just give them money, just plain give them money, because we've already inducted them into the service and we've already got them serving their time. So let's bring them home and just give them money. At least they'll spend it at home, not over there.
Well, and that gets back to my original point, is that we need to start taking care of ourselves. You know, we just can't keep giving money away. I mean, this is one thing that really, really bugs me. We borrowed money from China, and we turned around and gave it away to somebody else.
That's it. We're borrowing money from one people to support wars in other countries.
Or economic development. How about economic development in our own country? And it doesn't have to be, you know, a stimulus package per se, like we did before. How about just making it a little bit cheaper, like you said earlier in the program, for businesses to stay here and to start hiring people? Because if they don't do something now, it's only going to get worse. And we're slowly becoming a third world country in ourselves.
Yeah. Well, businesses are moving away, and they're doing it because they can't afford to be here anymore. So you're right. We've got to do something about allowing them to be able to afford to be here. That's just all there is to it.
Well, in fact, let me throw out a little analogy. In your hometown of Cottage Grove, do you recall back probably about 5 years ago, this company that made these little squeeze flashlights for your key ring?
I don't remember them, no, but...
Well, anyways, what they did, these are an LED flashlight. They're about the size of a quarter or a 50-cent piece, and you squeeze and the light comes on. Well, what this guy was doing, this entrepreneur, is that instead of hiring a bunch of employees to make this, because this was a startup company, he would let people go ahead and assemble these things on a piecework basis. So it was great for people who are retired or whatever, and they just want to make some extra money. Well, the state decided that all these people that are assembling these things for him at home are employees. And
yeah.
So he fought that and basically said, hey, look, well, let me back up for a moment. They wanted him to start paying employment taxes, unemployment insurance, and all the other things that go along with having employees. And he says, well, look, I'm just trying to, you know, I'm trying to get this business started, and I'm trying to help the people in my community here, you know, so they can make it some extra money. And he says, I could just send it to China or Mexico or someplace really cheap and have them manufactured, but I don't want to do it. I want to keep it here in America. Well, as far as I know, he closed down the company completely.
Yeah, yeah. And that's too bad, because, you know, our federal government or state government or whomever should be at least flexible enough to understand what's going on. And if you want to get something out of it, I can understand the there being some taxes, but let's change the rates, let's change the rules, let's make it a rule that allows this to happen. And make a little tax on it or something, but don't run the man out of business. And this is being done other places as well. There's other businesses working right now.
Well, why do you think that a lot of companies are hiring illegal aliens? It's not the fact that, you know, they can pay them the same hourly wage. It's just that they're paying them under the table, so they don't have to match Social Security. They don't have to match FICA. They don't have to contribute to a bunch of the other things. So, you know, a $9 an hour employee, I mean, like when I owned a business, a $9 an hour employee would actually cost me about $11, $12 an hour.
Right.
If somebody's working under the table, a $9 an hour employee is a $9 an hour employee.
Right. Well, that's what I say. We need to make different rules and adjust things so that it makes it acceptable to do things in the United States. We've priced ourselves out of the world market at this particular point, and even out of our own market. You know, why would anybody build something here when they can go to Mexico and build it for at least a quarter of the price? And that's what's going to have to happen. It's happening right now. Wages in the United States have gone down. They've gone down radically, like 30% or around 30%. Wages have gone down. They're not going to go back up again, folks, because we have to equalize the world. We can't be isolationists anymore. We got to be part of what's going on in the world, and in the world, wages are not that high. And so consequently, if I want to make a widget here and make it competitive worldwide, I have to be able to make it cheaper. And as long as our wages are this high, then I can't make it cheaper. And things like the National Labor Relations Board going after Boeing because they wanted to be able to do things cheaper in South Carolina, that's got to stop. We can't have that happening. Unions, I'm not saying we should get rid of unions, but we should not ever make them mandatory anywhere. We should be able to use unions or not use unions. And the result of that, of course, would be that union wages would come down. I'm sorry, but it's going to have to happen. We're all going to have to tighten our belts a little bit in order for this to take place, and we're all going to do it. And it's either going to happen gradually and easily, so to speak, or the whole thing is going to collapse, and it's going to happen all at once, and it's going to hurt a lot of people. So, but it is going to happen. It is simply going to happen. It has to, because we can't remain competitive the way we are.
I totally agree with that. But, you know, what are we going to do? And the only thing we can do as a people, and it gets back to the presidential election,
yep,
is to focus our questions, including the media, focusing the questions more about the economy, jobs, what we're going to do about, you know, spending, and worry more about that than worry about somebody's religious beliefs or abortion.
Well, the media is more interested in finding out who's dating who and who's cheating on their wife and things like that. They're not really too concerned about real life, unfortunately. So we've got to do this. You know, that's what's happening right now. Our show on the internet and other things on the internet are what's making a huge change in the world as it stands, and it's going to continue to make these changes because media is going to have to come around. They're becoming gossips. The media itself is becoming gossips. We've got to, and if you really want to find out what's going on in the world nowadays, you really almost have to go online and look up what's taking place. Of course, you have to decide who to trust and who not to trust. You've got to use your own intelligence somewhere along the line. But it's all going to sort itself out, and it's all, I think, going to turn out to be a part of the Internet. The Internet is going to be the big thing that's going to change things. Look at it, what it's doing in these countries who are fighting wars and who are having civil unrest. The Internet is doing all of this. So I think we need to be paying a whole lot more attention to the Internet and, of course, this show than we have been. And, of course, we'll be back again next week at same time, same station.
That's a quick promo.
Well, we're coming to the end of the show.
It's true. Pastor Bradley, you have anything to add?
No. I'm good. I'm not going to make anything up.
Well, Bradley, I've been refreshingly, pleased at your opinions. Being a pastor, you have a very worldly, shall I say, opinion about how things should work. I mean, you're not nearly as narrow sighted as an awful lot of people are. So,
I appreciate that.
I just wanted to say that because I've heard what you've commented on in the last few weeks, and I'm very impressed with the opinions that you have.
Thank you.
I think he's blushing.
Well, I agree with a lot of his opinions because, you know, you don't need to be so adamant about crazy things. Some people are. We need to get along with each other. And again, as he says and I say, your religion should be your religion, not everybody's religion, and it shouldn't be. Of course, I understand that there are many religions who that's their whole big thing is to go out and preach to the world and make everybody believe the way you do. I disagree with that.
And speaking of preaching to the world, we'll preach to the world again on next week because we are running out of time here, folks.
646-721-9887. You want to write that down because next week you're going to want to use that number and call in.
Definitely. And if you have an idea or see something in the news that you want to bring to our attention, please send us an email, talk@krbnradio.com, or if you just want to say hi, that's fine too. We always respond to our emails and appreciate the ones that we do get.
And if you want to criticize, do it then. I'd like to say bye, everybody. Have a good week.
Check us out on the internet at www.krbnradio.com or email us with your show ideas at talk@krbnradio.com. This is KRBN Internet News Talk Radio.